Very good morning to you. Welcome into today's programme on Thursday, the 14th of March. You're welcome to Galway Talks with me, John Morley. Coming up on the programme today, Ireland referred to the ECJ over protection of bogs. Boher has launched a fundraising campaign for Palestine. St. Patrick's Weekend break-in warnings. We'll be hearing more about that. It's Social Prescribing Day as well as World Kidney Day. North Galway communities mobilise over wind farm threat. Galway and Dublin greats join forces in support of Palestine on the GEA front. It's day three of Cheltenham. We'll have a preview of that. The first ever Irish Sign Language broadcast is also going to be discussed. We have Ars Protect with organic gardening. And we have live music from Greenshine. All that plus lots of more between now and 12 midday. Majinwa a winchna galiva. And a very good morning to you. Welcome into today's programme. It's a very good morning if you're recovering from a chest infection, I can tell you that. And we have lots coming up on the programme today, so do stay with us between now and 12 midday. And I just want to let you know, if you want to get a text and WhatsApp into us, you can on our number. That's 086-383-553. That is our text and WhatsApp number. Siobhan is on reception on 0917700077. And email comments at galwaybayfm.ie. I'm really looking forward to the broadcast, our Community Matters show, tomorrow morning in Salt Hill. We have a big lineup of guests. I'll bring you that later on in the programme as well. But it's one not to miss. A lot of great stories and a lot of great personalities on the programme tomorrow. We're coming from O'Connor's Bar in Salt Hill between 9 and 12. So if you are in the Salt Hill area, as we get ready for the busy St. Patrick's Day celebrations this weekend, do pop in and say hello to us as well. There's a lot of excitement in the Salt Hill area this weekend. Now, though, I want to go to our first topic this morning, because news broke yesterday, and I think it caught a lot of people off guard, that Ireland has been referred to the European Court of Justice over protection of bogs. And they've been brought there for failing to halt the continued cutting of peat in areas designated to conserve raised bogs and blanket bogs as well. Now, to discuss this further, I'm joined on the line now by someone who's done a lot of work in this regard, Independent TD Michael Fitzmaurice, who is the chair of the Turf Cutter and Contractors Association. Deputy Michael Fitzmaurice, good morning.
Good morning, John. How are you?
I'm not too bad. What's your reaction to this news that broke yesterday?
Well, it's a retrograde step. It's disgusting, actually, to see what the EU have done. I went out myself last September, October, to explain the complexities of the problem. And bear in mind that 80% of this is sorted. The EU, what they have done now, I know it will take 2 years before it goes to the courts, but there was a relationship built up, and it was through hard work over the last number of years between the people that owns bogs, the Turf Cutters and Contractors Association and the National Parks, in resolving this problem step by step. A lot of work has gone into it. And bear in mind, and this is what people need to realise, that in the morning the EU can come the heavy hand and they can say you cannot do X, Y or Z. But the end goal, that if they're working on bogs, that they do restoration works on them, and it's private property, John. And they will not be able to walk in on private property without the farmers, or some of them are non-farmers, consent. And it's actually a very stupid move what they have done. I know that, in fairness to the authorities here, they've come out and said they are going to defend this. But the problem is, and let's be honest with people here, we're going into a kangaroo court in 2 years' time. Because yesterday I asked, could I give evidence at this court, and I've been told no, it's legal argument, and I am now trying to see, can we put a document in to show the amount of work that has been done by ordinary people around this country in cooperation in resolving this issue. And I think that it is, you know, a really, really bad move. It's a bully tactic by the EU, but the only problem is that we have environmental lobby groups gone over every day, given inaccurate information, that never rolled up their sleeves themselves. It's ordinary people that's doing this on the ground, day in, day out, working in collaboration with the state to resolve all these issues. And bear in mind, out of the 57 complexes, we are down to about 12 at the moment, and the National Parks is working with the different turf cutters right around the country in getting resolutions. This isn't a fast process. And the other thing the EU need to be mindful of is that there's no new chimneys in houses, John. This will phase itself out in its own time, so let them not get panicky. And some of the stuff they wrote on it about that you need to be making drains above in the high bog, obviously it's a bureaucrat that doesn't even understand the system that we use in Ireland whatsoever. It is ironic also that the only country in Europe that is doing rewetting is now being the country brought to court where other countries have sat in their arse and done damn all.
Because the European project is meant to be one of consensus and dialogue and people thrashing things out. And I know that there has been a lot of work going on in the background with yourself and others in Europe on this issue. So why now? Why are they clamping down now? And where is this coming from?
Well, it has come as a bolt out of the blue, to be quite frank about it. They did lose the commission brought a case about 9 or 10 months ago against Ireland. They weren't successful in all of that case, and they seem to be a bit peeved that they lose part of a case, and they're coming back again. That's not the way you do business, as you've rightly pointed out. It should be one of consensus. And at the end of the day, what do we want? What is the objective? The objective should be that we resolve it for the turf cutting community, that we resolve the problems for the state, and that we comply basically with this alleged EU law. But what people must understand is if they start using a sledge to crack a nut, they will be in serious bother because the shutters will be pulled down and the TCCA executive will be meeting inside the next week to make a decision. Would they be advising people to stop all cooperation? It is a sad thing to have to say after, as you were well aware, in 2011 or 12 and 13, we had planes and we had the Gardaí, through no fault of their own, flying over innocent people within and bugs. Thankfully, a relationship has been built since. Everyone rolled up their sleeves and they are working on this together. A lot of progress has been made. If you look at the stats even, I think it's something like 40% less turf has been cut since 2020 on those complexes. And now this bolt out of the blue is a very unhelpful scenario that has come.
You said a lot of strong words there in terms of EU bully tactics and a kangaroo court coming up along the way.
Yeah.
But is the problem here that technically, by the letter of the law, they can do this and they are right under the Habitats Directive?
Well, the Habitats Directive, ironically enough, is the big problem that our now President Michael D. Higgins signed in. It is biting us in the backside, no more than when I was on your programme over the last few months for the NRL, Nature Restoration Law, that it's not the day it comes in that it catches you. It's down the road. We see the Habitats Directive, be it in roads, we see in Connemara, the amount of hassle that people go through. We see the when they're trying to widen roads, we see Galway Port, we see airports, we see Lough Fuinchin and Roscommon that everyone is well familiar with, where people are, water is nearly coming in their door, but they cannot resolve the issue because of bureaucracy. And that is a major, major problem, and that's why I have opposed the Nature Restoration Law as well so much, because it's not today, it's 5, 10, 15 years' time that when cases, and this is what happens, it's actually not governments that does it, it's cases brought to the European Court and the outcomes of them put you in a straitjacket. And ironically enough, we had sites in Kildare, and this will give you an example, where turf cutters, the good turf cutters of Ireland, they were willing to go up or down the road a few miles. And we had the same people that is talking, that wanted the Habitats Directive in, environmentalists objecting to those people having a small bit of a bog for themselves. That's not how you make progress. How you make progress is the way we have worked over the last 4 to 5 years together. And this isn't one or other better than the other. It took great, great leadership from ordinary people on the ground, that they met engineers from the national parks. They worked together. They made sure that there wouldn't be a problem on the line of, you know, damaging their land or anything in those areas that the work was done. And in fairness to national parks, they worked with us. And this work altogether has seen huge, huge success over the last 4 to 5 years. And now there is a big danger that will be put back on our backsides back to where we were, everyone back in the trenches. And I hate to see a thing like that after so much effort has gone in.
But is the argument from Europe, though, this has been too slow? I do know that some 2,454 people have already availed of the cessation of Ireland's turf-cutting compensation scheme. There have been that 40% reduction in turf-cutting between 2020 and 2023. In addition to that, around 20,000 farmers are engaged in the results-based programme on restoration of blanket bogs in the SACs through the Acres Nature Cooperation Programme. But has it just been too slow for Europe?
Well, it all depends on what's too slow. Do you want to bully people out of their own private property? In my opinion, absolutely, you never do that. You work in collaboration. The private property, what the Commission needs to understand, property rights in Europe is a fair bit different to property rights in Ireland. So do we want a scenario that they can come the heavy hand and say, you can't do X, Y, or Z, or you can't cut your turf on one of those designated bogs? How will you get to the end game of the restoration if it's private property and you have been a bully? Nobody, upon nobody, will let you walk in on their private property. And what we had done was, we had worked together in finding solutions, and unfortunately, this is basically a bolt out of the blue that has done a lot of destruction.
You mentioned the minister, and I know that the Minister of State with responsibility for this area, Malcolm Noonan, a spokesperson from his office, said that Ireland robustly defend its actions in relation to the bogs and has put enormous efforts, money and commitments in place and has been leading from the front in terms of nature registration in the European Union. You do have government backing here.
Yeah, well, and rightly so. And it's a recognition, and in fairness to the minister, it's a recognition of the amount of, you know, goodwill and hard work done by the ordinary people, the people that own those bogs right around this country. And yes, I hope that they defend it. But the sad part about this is, when you go into the European Court of Justice, it's legal argument. You're not allowed to give evidence yourself. This is the problem, because I inquired about it yesterday. I was furious yesterday when I heard this, and I actually made the calls to see, could we give evidence to show the complexities of this issue and to explain it, because some person within with a wig on them doesn't understand how you resolve the issue in the west of Ireland or the east of Ireland or the south of Ireland. They don't understand the nuts and bolts of it. They'll be going by a thing called law. Well, law doesn't always work. Sometimes the law can be an ass. And if you don't sit down and say, what is the end game here? Can we get to the final destination, bring everyone with us, or can we not? And what they have done now is they have put a real, you know, damper on all of this.
But it comes at a time where Ireland is looking at removing passenger caps in Dublin Airport, and now they're looking to punish a few handful of farmers for cutting a few hoppers.
Yeah, and look, at sometimes you'd wonder where we're going in the whole scenario. And on top of that, they're talking the nature restoration law. I hear at the moment, I don't know whether it's right or wrong, that a lot of countries has pushed back again in the Environment Committee about it. I hope that has happened, because I've made it very clear that the likes of the nature restoration law, not now, after 7 years, is in 2031 and from then on. That's when those things will hit you. And bad law is no good to anybody. What you need to do is basically work with people everywhere. It was the beginning in the EU one time, or in the EEC, it was about community. This EU is like a union. It's like marriage. It's either love or divorce. And they seem to have no concept of working together with anybody.
Now, I know you're planning to convene a meeting of the Turf Cutters and Contractors Association to deliberate your next steps. When's that going to be, or what's your next steps?
I expect that it'll be within the next week. The executive will meet of the TCCA, and we will discuss what has come out of it. I was actually in contact yesterday with some people in the national parks who don't want to see the progress that has been made disappear. They don't want to see the relationships that has been built up, the working relationship that had been built up. They don't want to see that falling apart. But The only problem is what the EU have done now, it's going to, you know, it has really put a spanner in the works.
Separately, it's been a very, I suppose, strange week for the agri and industrial community as well, with this new change to licences and needing a HGV licence if you're driving a tractor on a construction site.
Yeah, well, thankfully, on Thursday afternoon, after a lot of sort of negotiation or a lot of talking to ministers and that, that has been averted at the moment. It's the different bodies like the FCA and the Plant Contractors Association and the CIF, the Construction Industry Federation, can now sit down and try and resolve this issue, because the facts are, and that no one caught themselves, if you have an Arctic license, you don't go back driving a tractor. So what needs to be done is use a bit of cop on and common sense in this at the moment, thankfully, because the reality here, John, was that, you know, I know sites around the country where there was a lot of tractors working and they were actually off-hired, which was an awful scenario. In basically, like, you turn off a light in the matter of a while of a night, this was done. And you cannot handle anything like that. You have to, you know, this was just a bolt out of the blue, no more than yesterday's thing. Thankfully, it's put off. And now is the time for the different organisations to go in and basically thrash out a common sense solution to things. Because common sense solutions can be found and done.
All right, Deputy Michael Fitzmaurice, the chairman of the TCCA, thank you for joining us on Galway Talks.
Thanks, John. Bye-bye.
What are your thoughts on this? Get them into us on 0863833553. That is our text and WhatsApp number. Phone Siobhan on reception on 0917700077 and email comments at galwaybayfm.ie. We need more Michael people like that fighting for us in Europe, says one of our listeners. Also, John, Michael Fitzmaurice knows that we are in the EU. We take all their money, handouts, and so we must abide by their rules. We're in the EU, like it or not. Another listener says, Putin must be laughing at us. And this listener says, I agree wholeheartedly with Deputy Michael Fitzmaurice. So that's a flavour of some of the texts coming into us. If you want to get your texts in, do so straight away. Coming up after this, we're looking at the charity Bohr, because they have launched their fundraising appeal for Easter for Palestine. That's up next. And a very good morning to you. Welcome back into today's programme. Another text coming into us this morning. Europe is no good for working class people, only the rich companies. They are dictating to us and taking away our culture of farming, cutting turf, etc., so the likes of wind farms can come in and make millions. Nature restoration, my eye, so says this caller. Now, though, I want to move on today, because Bohr has launched their Easter fundraising campaign for Palestine. And should I say, I'm joined in studio by the CEO of Bohr, Eilish O'Reilly. Eilish, good morning.
Good morning, John. How are you?
Great to have you in with us this morning. A very important campaign for Easter, and a very important area you've picked here in Palestine that's suffering over the last few weeks and months.
Yes, and Bohr are based out of Limerick, as people might know, and we generally work in other areas like Tanzania, Rwanda, Kosovo, with farming communities and farming families involved in sustainable development. And we do, because of the nature of the work we do come across emergency situations or areas that have this huge humanitarian need. And that's what we see facing us in Palestine now. So we would have engaged with agencies that work on the ground in Palestine over the last few months and would have been watching the situation unfold and be aware that the food security systems were collapsing. So for our Easter appeal this year, we have picked Palestine because we feel that there is a need there, that like there's an obvious need there, and perhaps that our supporters and people in Ireland would like to do something to help and would like to know what to do to help. So we're raising funds and we're sending the funding to the UN agencies that are working with Palestine.
It's all good and well sending funds there to support the aid effort, but then it's another task to actually get the aid into the country and to the people who need it.
Yes, and we saw, thankfully, yesterday that some of the aid that's entering the country, the number of trucks going into the country had increased slightly, and that at the what they call the 96th gate along the border, that the UN were able to negotiate a trial run of trucks that were going in, and that the agencies worked together to get that aid into Palestine and some aid that reached the north of Gaza. So, like, we would believe that the UN agencies, with their, I suppose, their international community behind them, are best placed and best positioned to negotiate to get the aid in there, and then to engage and work with the local agencies. I would have seen that in Haiti after earthquake and after hurricane. The UN agencies will engage with the local agencies then to help distribute aid across the country and reach the people that need it most. Mm-hmm. So, like, the capacity for the UN to do this, is it's almost unique for them that they have the ability to do this at the moment.
They're not having an easy time on the ground at the moment, the UN agencies.
No, and yesterday there was another UN employee who was killed in an incident there. But also last Friday, the group that we would contact last Friday, they lost one of their people. So, like, people that are working there are, you know, they're really literally putting their life on the line to help the people of Palestine. And I think one of the things that happens when you hear of a donation or aid that is coming in and you're working like that, it gives you a type of a boost or a lift to say, you know, the world has not forgotten us. The world is helping. The world is going to help these children to keep them from starving to death in 2024. So it can, you know, it can be a very difficult time on the front line of the work that they're doing. But to hear that Ireland or that the Boher might be sending funding to them might be the thing that makes all the difference today or tomorrow to say yes, like that little bit of boost of support to say we'll keep going here.
Mm. I think the voices, though, to call for a ceasefire and peace and dialogue in the conflict have been getting louder and louder and louder over the past few weeks and months. And even later on in the programme today, I'm going to have Dublin and Galway GAA footballers on who are similarly calling and doing a demonstration at the match of the weekend as well. So the voices are getting louder calling for a ceasefire and peace in the region.
Yes, and most if not all of the agencies in Ireland, NGOs and international NGOs, have been calling for a ceasefire for some time and have an online petition to call for a ceasefire. And that is, you know, that is the solution here, to be able to allow the people of Gaza to return to their homes, to, you know, restart their own food security systems, to move past this and, you know, to live in peace. And that would be what we would like to see happen. And it's great that people will use their social capital to help in any way. And again, you know, people had been asking us, our supporters were like, we'd like to help, we don't know how to help, which is why Boher picked Palestine for our Easter appeal. But also you see that people in sport using their capital to, you know, to highlight an issue and to say, you know, let's raise our voices here to look for peace. And that's a very positive thing. And even, you know, yourselves and Galway BFM to give us a chance to come in and talk about our work and to talk about our appeal. Like, that's, again, you know, we're using our capital here as best we can to support these people.
Mm. If people do want to donate to this appeal, what's the best way of doing that?
So our free phone number, 1-800-268-463. That's 1-800-268-463. And you'll find all the information you need about donating or donating online on our website at www.boher.ie.
Mm. Finally, you were appointed CEO of Boher back there in December,
yes,
just gone by. What are your goals and what would you like to see achieve as a CEO of Boher over the next while?
So Boher are a very different organisation than what we started out as and what we've gone through in our history, where we've moved our offices to Regis in Castletroy. We're a smaller team. And over the time, like, we had started off that we were sending animals abroad. But over time, like, farming practices and just the different ability of how we can help farming families and farming communities has changed. For example, genetics or sending straws out to, for example, to Rwanda. We would have sent in-calf heifers originally, but now we have straws there with Ministry of Agriculture there to keep, you know, to sustain that. So we don't have a pressing need to ship to them at the moment. And we would look at over the next year and 2 years, we would look at continuing to work with our community in Tanzania who work with women and girls that have been trafficked. We're supporting a project that they're doing which is about farming and creating a farm on their facility that will allow them to be sustainable and not be so dependent on external aid coming in, that they will be able to self-sustain the project and continue to help and support their community. And then we will be meeting with our partner in Rwanda this week to see the families that received animals in the early years. Where are they at now? What is that community at now? And what do they need? Because that's really where it's at, is putting the capacity with the local community and saying, what is your need and how can we respond to it? So it's building those kind of partnerships with Rwanda, with Tanzania, with Kosovo, and saying, what is the need and how can Boher help? But still within the context of sustainable development for farming families and farming communities. So that's what we're doing. And so that's the type of activity we'll be involved in. We will do emergency relief and respond to humanitarian crises as and if the need arises. And we would like to thank all of our donors for their contributions and for their support over the years, and we hope they would like to continue on this journey with us. Mm.
But that work you're doing in Africa, I know a lot of it is very fundamental and basic stuff, but it goes a long way for those communities.
Oh, absolutely. And like, if you think that we here in Ireland, like, we have our farm planning and we will develop our plan over the years about how we'll work our plan and we'll modify it for things like climate or stocking densities, etc., farm families in Rwanda are doing exactly the same thing. Their needs have changed over the years. Their children are maybe older and have been through school. The education part maybe is finished, but now they're looking at succession, or how are they creating an economy that their young people can find a sustainable livelihood for them and their families in farming. So it's that type of activity and that type of work. So we are looking at working in the same community we had been in previously, but more on a broader community level for training and support and economic activity.
All right, Eilish O'Reilly, the CEO of Boher, thank you for joining us on Galway Talks.
Thank you, John.
To your comment lines very quickly, because one or two callers have called in this morning. I found a bag with money in it at the post box in Lisbon. I will drop it into the Garda station this evening. And this other caller says, shows how our lives are being increasingly run by a load of bureaucrats who do not give a sod about us. I believe that's in relation to the turf story as well. So all that plus lots more coming in on our comment lines this morning. 086 38 33 553. That is our text and WhatsApp number. Phone Siobhan on reception on 0917 700 077, and email comments at galwaybayfm.ie. Coming up next, there's a warning about break-ins over the St. Patrick's Day weekend, and as well as that, it's Social Prescribing Day. All that plus lots more coming up between now and 10 o'clock. And a very good morning to you. Welcome back into today's programme. Now, I'm delighted to say I'm joined on the line by Keith Martin, who is the sales manager with Netwatch. Keith, good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you for joining us on the programme today. You're joining us because Galway businesses have been warned not to depend on the luck of the Irish for protection during St. Patrick's Festival weekend. We see it every year that there are opportunists out there that look to strike at homes and people are out celebrating. And you're urging people to be more cautious this year.
Yes, we've seen, I suppose, a rise year on year from March last year to March from 22. There was a 33% increase, and even from February of last year to March of last year, there was a 56% increase in the number of incidents for Netwatch customers. So there's definitely a trend there, and we find, especially around the St. Patrick's weekend, that you know, it definitely is a contributing factor to it.
And do we know if this is during the day while people are out at the parades, or is it nighttime, or is it a mixture of both?
It's a mixture of both. Look, with the parades and everything on, especially for the retail and hospitality sectors, there's an increase in footfall. But then again, for the long weekend, there will be premises that's left idle. You know, companies that finish up on a Friday, they're not back to work again till a Tuesday. So again, the opportunity there is there for people to you know, to break in and do damage.
What advice do yourselves and Netwatch have for people who are going out celebrating?
I think that the key is really prevention and deterrence. That's the two messages we try and get across for business owners, especially. Look, check for weaknesses within their current setup. the advice, I suppose, to restrict and have access controls into sensitive areas where there may be, you know, valuable goods. Their operating hours, make sure that they do reach out to their current security providers and make them aware if there is changes in terms of hours. And communication really is key. You know, communicate with staff, make sure that they're aware of the security procedures that are in place, and communicate with I suppose, the Gardaí. If you do find that, you know, something just isn't sitting right with you, make sure that they're made aware of it as well.
Now, you are a security company yourselves. They are based out of Carlow. What can you help and offer to people to help improve the security and safety of their homes?
For us, I suppose, with NetWatch, primarily we look after businesses and we do some residential work as well. But I suppose for us, what separates us apart is we have a hub in Carlow, as you say. We also have a hub in Uri. Ours is live monitoring, so we look at the situation as it unfolds. A lot of businesses would have CCTV to come back and they can survey the damage on the Tuesday, whereas with ourselves, it's real time. We give an audio warning. It's more about the prevention and the deterrence with us, as opposed to reacting after the fact.
Mm. And in terms of the cost and the setting up of this for businesses?
Again, it depends business by business. It does vary a great deal depending on what the requirements are. But I suppose what we do is everything is bespoke. So we go, we sit down, we visit with the customer, and we offer a fully managed solution. So again, it allows the business customer to focus on their key business, and then we look after the security needs for them.
Mm. It must require a huge workforce to monitor live all these premises that are signed up.
We I suppose, look, the technology that's in place at the minute is brilliant. We have our own software. We have our own in-house development team as well, which helps us to, I suppose, weed out the false alarms that may cause a problem for other providers, whereas with ourselves, as I said, you know, the likes of AI helps us to determine what is a real threat and what isn't a real threat. So, look, we cover the United States, we cover the US, we cover UK, Europe, and we're branching out into Australia and New Zealand as well.
Keith Martin, the sales manager of NetWatch, thank you for joining us on Galway Talks. Now, though, I want to change tact altogether because it is Social Prescribing Day. And I say I'm joined in studio once again by Suzanne McCain, who is the Social Prescribing Coordinator for Galway City. Suzanne, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
It's an important day and it's important work you do. Just to simplify it for people, you give a helping hand for people to access community-based supports.
That's it exactly. So people will come to us for all sorts of reasons. It could be that they've suffered a bereavement or been diagnosed with a health condition, but it could also be that their best buddy has just moved away and they're a little bit at a loss. And we get referrals in. We get referrals in from GPs, from OTs, or people can self-refer as well. There should be information. There's information on the website, but also posters in libraries and post offices, etc.
Now, you celebrated in earnest on Monday last.
Yes, we officially launched the service last Monday. So it was launched by the Mayor, Councillor Eddie Hoare, and the Minister, Hildegard Nocton. Unfortunately, she couldn't be there for the day, but she did send a lovely message kicking it off. And it was attended by over 100 people. We had performances from the Ukrainian Choir, Harmony, and the Ballyban Community Choir as well. So it was a great celebration.
And in terms of those who attended, were they professionals or were they people looking to access supports?
It was a mix. It was mostly professionals and people who we would possibly link in with in terms of people who would refer into the support, or people we'd link in with in terms of the likes of the Men's Shed, the Let's Get Galway Growing, which is a community garden initiative in Galway as well.
In terms of the people you're looking to reach out to and help, just give us a sense of them.
Yes, we're happy to work with anybody who's over 18. I cover Galway City, and it is people who just feel they need a helping hand to connect or reconnect with things happening in their community. And it's totally what they're interested in. So it doesn't have to be formal training, even though it can be. It could be just dipping into a coffee morning or a walking group that happens once a week. Or it could be joining a club or an activity or accessing supports. There's quite a lot happening in Galway, so we're lucky in many ways.
And in terms of the factors that might be impacting on people that they might need to reach out for you, it could be a mixture of a lot of things, whether they're social factors like poverty, the environment, isolation, loneliness. It's a mixture of stuff.
It is. And I suppose the origins of social prescribing, to bring it back, is that GPs found a number of people were coming to them with social issues as opposed to medical issues. I think the research indicates it's 20% of GP visits. So it's acknowledging the social impacts on people's health and trying to address that.
It's fairly expanded across the country in recent years. I know there are social prescribing services in over 30 locations, including acute hospital settings in Ireland.
Yes, social prescribing started in 2012 as a pilot project in Mayo. Then it started up in Donegal, and since then it has developed. I think there's actually 40 plus. There is a commitment that there'll be a social prescribing project in every county by the end of this year from the HSE.
And I suppose the benefit of this on the health service as well, you can actually step them down from non-clinical activities as well.
That's the one of the rationales behind it. And there is research to indicate that when people engage in social prescribing and reconnect in the community, that GP visits can go down and additional medical needs can be decreased.
Mm. There are challenges to it as well, though, because I know it might be more applicable to your colleague in the county as well. But in terms of transport links and lack of internet access and stigma as well, are there some problems you face in service?
Yes, I suppose the transport, even in the city, that can be an issue for some people, especially if they're not on a bus link or where they want to go is a couple of buses away, but it's not as big as in the county. The stigma, I'm not so sure about, because it's quite a subtle support. Okay. And it's also people come for all types of reasons. You know, it's not necessarily that somebody has suffered a bereavement or have a health condition. It could be, as I said, their best friend moved away and that was the person that they socialised with and they're a little bit at a loss.
Mm. If people want to get more details on the work you're doing, I know you launched there on Monday. Where's the best way of doing that?
The best way would be to contact me on 083-196-9370 or email me at Suzanne, S-U-Z-A-N-N-E, at gcp.ie. That's for GalwayCityPartnership.ie. And there is also a website called the All Ireland Social Prescribing Network, and that has a lot of information about social prescribing and a lot of resources. And I mean, if you go onto YouTube, there's a number of videos, testimonials from people across the country of their experience of engaging with social prescribing.
Brilliant. Suzanne McCain, the Social Prescribing Coordinator for Galway City, thank you very much indeed for joining us on Galway Talks this morning.
Thank you.
Still to come on the programme today, it's a very busy one, I must say. We are going to be speaking with four individuals indeed who are hitting out as the community mobilises to action, as Shan Clune Wind Farm Action Group expect planning submission to be very imminent indeed. There's a meeting being held on the bank holiday Monday in relation to that. We have the Connacht Tribune headlines coming up as well in the next hour. As well as that, I mentioned earlier as well, Galway and Dublin GEA greats are all joining together in Pearse Stadium this weekend, and they're calling for people to support efforts to end the war in Israel and Palestine indeed as well. So the Stop the Genocide campaign is going to be kicking off in earnest. And as well as that, it's day three of Cheltenham. We'll have our charity bet and all the preview of the action with our racing correspondent, George McDonough. So all that plus lots more coming up on the programme today, including a lovely piece on Culture Corner as the very first ever Irish Sign Language broadcast version of an Irish TV drama takes to the screens. It's Sail Ella, a great show indeed. And we've talked to the star of that in the past as well. So all that plus lots more coming up on the programme today. If you want to get text and WhatsApp into us, you can do on our number. That's 086-38-33-553. That is our text and WhatsApp number. Phone Siobhan on reception 091-77-0077 and email comments at goibayfm.ie. We're back with more interviews and views after news.